Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got a wonderful show in store for you, and I'm looking forward to bringing my guest on real quick. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago. This is a really good one. So listen, like, you got to pay attention to this one. And this blog post is entitled, "To Heal Our Trauma Takes Great Courage." Trauma is not something that happens only once. Our experience of the trauma may have happened a long time ago, or it may have happened yesterday. Yet the feeling of it lives within us. And we relive the trauma over and over again in our minds. It causes us to create new patterns and ways of being that stay with us. The stories we tell ourselves and others are all affected by it. So the experience lives on inside of us for months, years, and decades. Any little thing can trigger our trauma response. A look, a word, a tone, or even a smell. Suddenly we find ourselves back in the torturous time of our life when nothing made sense. Our sense of safety and security are all gone. No one really understands us, for no one else has lived through the exact same trauma that we experienced. Even if they can sympathize and empathize with us because of their own trauma, ours is always unique to us. Our own trauma is always the hardest for us to work through. The only thing we can do is to stop looking for sympathy and do the hard work of unwinding the trauma. For the world will not change itself to suit us. It goes on exactly as it is. And so do all the people we know. For it is not their responsibility to heal us. It is ours. So it may not seem fair that we have to do the hard work and go through the pain, the memories, and the agony of letting go of our attachment to the trauma. Though when we do, we are the ones who truly benefit from the hard work. It is our life that gets better and improves. Our heart is the one that feels lighter and more at peace. The rewards of being willing to look at things that most people don't are immeasurable. So while our trauma is our greatest pain, it is also our greatest gift. Without it, we would not dive deep into our pain and do something about it. And perhaps once we have started on the path of healing and wholeness, we just might inspire someone else to do the same. For while we cannot change someone else, we can be an example that they can follow should they choose to do so. Once enough of us step up to be that example, maybe we can ultimately heal the world. Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing indeed? So this particular blog post came to me a couple of years ago. I guess it was when I was facing some of my own difficult things and also working with others who were dealing with their own trauma. And it, just this idea of like not comparing ourselves to others. And that I realize that when we see someone else's trauma, when we've seen what they've been through, it seems so clear to us what needs to be done. It seems so clear to us where those patterns formed and those habits and the unhealthy relationships, whatever. It's just so obvious to us because it was not our trauma. It was someone else's. So we don't have an emotional attachment to it. So what happens? When we have to deal with our own trauma, may not be as severe as someone else's, may not be seem as big or as painful as someone else's, but it's ours. And so for us to see our own trauma as clearly as we can see someone else's is really difficult because we didn't live through their trauma and they didn't live through ours. So comparing what we've experienced to what they experienced, it's not a fair comparison. To compare how we're dealing with our trauma versus how they're dealing with their trauma is not a fair comparison. And so I just kind of felt inspired to write this blog post because it does take great courage to face our own trauma. Facing someone else's trauma, it can be uncomfortable, but not nearly as bad. Facing our own trauma, oof, that's challenging. That's tough. And so I guess what I would love to inspire you is to be a little more compassionate to yourselves when facing your own trauma, and to be a little bit more compassionate with other people who are dealing with their own trauma. We don't have their experiences. We don't know what it's like to walk in their shoes. We don't truly know what it's like to live inside their skin. So maybe we can hold a little more space for them. Have a little bit more compassion. Be a little more supportive and kind, especially when they're going through their most difficult challenges. Trauma is not comparable. And what it takes for us to overcome our trauma, we're not overcome it, but at least hold it in a way that it's not dictating how we live our days. If we can at least get there, then we've really accomplished something. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a good one. So again, the title of this blog post is To Heal Our Trauma Takes Great Courage. And of course, you can always find my blogs on my personally branded website, The Conscious Consultant, as well as on the station website, talkradio.nyc/blog. And of course, if you love my blog posts, you'll love my book, Everyday Awakening, which you can find at all major booksellers. All right. It is now my pleasure to welcome to the show Sarah McCrum, a visionary money consciousness coach and educator whose work is transforming how people around the world relate to wealth. Sarah is the author of the new book, Love Money, Money Loves You. Yes, we're going to get into the money conversation today. After a profound spiritual experience in which she received direct messages from the energy of money itself, Sarah devoted her life to helping others heal their financial anxiety and rediscover money as a loving, supportive force. Her teachings invite us to move beyond scarcity into a deeper alignment with abundance, generosity, and ease. Drawing on her decades of work with entrepreneurs, leaders, and families, Sarah shares how our beliefs and emotions shape the flow of prosperity in our lives. Through her programs and masterclasses, she helps people create what she calls genuine wealth, a blend of financial freedom, emotional well-being, and soulful purpose. Her approach is practical yet deeply spiritual, combining energy awareness with grounded steps for living in harmony with the natural flow of giving and receiving. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Sarah.
Thank you very, very much. And that was a beautiful blog. So very, very true. I felt every word of it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. They tend to be rather apropos for who I'm having on my show that week. So I have a lot of people approach me about coming on the show who talk about abundance and making money and being more successful and all that stuff. And I'm usually pretty selective about who I have come on and who I don't. But you take a very different approach to it. So it really intrigued me and made me want to have you come on. And so I would love if we just got a couple of minutes before the break, if you could just, share with our audience, what happened? How did you kind of get in touch with the quote unquote energy of money? Because that's not something most people do, is it?
No, I actually had a business failure in 2010.
Okay.
Which is just a very painful experience. Mm-hmm. And it was shortly after that, and I was given a little book that had exercises in it. And one of the exercises said, "What would money like to say to you?" Which is kind of a pretty odd question, actually. Mm-hmm. But I was journaling, and I just started writing in my notebook, and my pen just took over. It was completely automatic writing. Mm-hmm. And the very first words that I wrote were, "I would like to tell you to love me." And then it went on and essentially said, "I am an energy. I'm very powerful and beautiful." And it talked about how it's not the devil and it never has been. And it's this beautiful energy of generosity. And it's here to help us connect with each other and contribute to each other, especially. Mm-hmm. And it ended by saying, "Don't wait, just take me. I will love you." And what happened was I wrote a series of messages from money like that. It was such a beautiful experience. I decided to do it again and again and again. And that formed the book.
I see. And before you had that experience with automatic writing, had you had any other like kind of spiritual experiences before? Do you ever had automatic writing before? Did you ever have like a deep revelation in meditation or anything?
I'd done 20 years at that point of energy work training with Chinese masters. So it was, I'm a natural channel type person, but I'd never experienced it in writing. I'd never experienced it in that kind of way. So it was both new and sort of fitted into the context of who I already was.
Got you. And so you say you studied with Chinese energy medicine masters. Was it Qigong or was it a different form?
I did 7 years of Qigong, and then I did 15 years with another master, which I just describe as energy for everything. It was really just the fundamentals of how life energy works in health and well-being, in healing, in family dynamics, in business, in money, the whole lot. So it was really how do you use subtle energy to mm-hmm. get a better life?
You studied sort of energy work for so long, did you ever become a practitioner? Did you offer energy? You did.
Yes, yes. I've been teaching for 26 years now.
Ah, okay. Okay, cool. All right. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, let's dive into sort of what the messages that money has for people. I haven't had a chance to fully read through the book, but I was going through the table of contents early, and you have some really fascinating chapter titles here. So I definitely want to touch on some of those. So we'll get into that after the break. Okay. Wonderful. So everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our guest this hour is Sarah McCrum, author of the book, love money, money loves you, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Sarah McCrum, author of the book, Love Money, Money Loves You. An interesting title. So Sarah, in the last segment, you mentioned how just one day you started automatic writing and connecting to this energy of this thing we call money. And you started, I'm taking it like that wasn't just a one-time thing, that happened several times afterwards.
Well, what happened is because it was such a beautiful experience and really heart-opening. You know, I read back what I'd written and it touched me deeply. I'd never heard anything like it in my life about money. And so because of that, you know, and I'd watched The Secret, I knew all the, you know, I'd been through all of that stuff, but when it came to me like this is an energy of love and so soft and so kind of kind and generous. It was unbelievable in a way. And so the next day or 2 days later, I said, well, I wonder if money's got something else to say to me. And I sat and I wrote a short message, just it was like a few paragraphs. And then the next day I did it again. And then I ended up doing it every day for about 3 months. And that's actually the content of the book. I have to say, just to be accurate, it's not a new book. It's not new. It's been published and republished a couple of times, but it's new to, you know, when people come across what's written in there, that tends to be very, very new to them.
Got it. Okay. What got you to say, you know, I should publish a book from all these writings?
It's funny, actually, because it never really occurred to me at first. I was just doing it and I was fascinated. And then I'd read Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations with God. And I thought, oh, you know what, if I was somebody like Neil, I would publish this. It just like that's what other people do when they have experiences like this. And it was really obvious that the information wasn't only for me. It was actually for sharing. Money didn't tell me that, but that was obvious. And it was funny because I was in a situation at the time, I had a Chinese master I was training with and we weren't really supposed to do things like that. She didn't want me to publish it for reasons that were nothing to do with me particularly. So originally I published it under a different name. I called myself Joy Prospero, which is a beautiful name. And I published it and I didn't tell anybody that I'd published it. I had no idea what to do with it. So it took a while for the book to find its place in the world.
Gotcha. I'm curious about your own personal experiences around money after you connected with this energy, like after feeling, and I want to get into what does it mean that feeling like money loves us? What do you mean money loves us? And it's generous and all that. What happened for you personally after that? Did anything shift and change, or were things just kind of the same? It just felt good.
So the first part, the first couple of years probably, or yeah, a bit more than a year at least, I was quite in denial of it. And that's partly because I'd been taught some things that made me very scared of channeled information. I was literally scared that if I didn't listen properly, I would die or something like that. There's a sort of old Chinese teaching. Yes. And then I moved to Australia. I left the whole Chinese master system. My husband and I moved to Australia. And we had
Where were you
no,
living at the time?
we were in New Zealand at the
In New
time
Zealand.
before. We moved to New Zealand. We had within a few, sorry, we moved to Australia. Within a few weeks, we were about to run out of money. We had a tiny bit of money to start with. And I had about 2 weeks in which to get paying the bills. And I met a psychic, funnily enough, and she said, "You've got to use your book, Sarah." And I started using the book, and literally the number of times when I couldn't see the rent, I didn't know anyone in Australia, nobody. So I had to start a business out of nothing. And it was, it's ch really challenging to do that. But every time I couldn't see the rent, it was like, okay, what does the book say? Ask for it, ask the energy of money to do this. And I learned how to do it, and it worked. So I learned every step of the way through personal experience.
Did it surprise you when it worked that very first time?
It didn't completely surprise me because of the work I'd done with Chinese masters, I've seen many, many what we call miracles and remarkable results. But what I hadn't seen was that happening for me. So the biggest surprise for me was that I used to get into battle sometimes. It's like, oh, this can't be true. Or what if this isn't true? What if I'm just being stupid or naive here? What if I really need to go and get a boring job and do something horrible to make money and get stability? And I would wrestle in my mind, as we do, as we all do at times, with, is something that's so intangible as what I've written in this book really going to help me? But every time, what I came to is, I don't care if it's true or not. I want it to be true. It's like I want to live in a world where money is an energy of love and it works in the way it's described. And every single time I did that, I got a result very noticeably. And that's how I learned to begin with. It's like, okay, so this energy really responds to us very directly. And it responds to us like when we shift beyond our traditional view of money, it's like it comes in closer. That was very fascinating for me.
So how would you say what you present here is different from things like The Secret and other books written about abundance? Because this that definitely has a unique and its own character to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it is different. I think all the other books, which are fantastic because they teach us so much about money. I think the thing that's fundamentally different from mine is it is the simple fact that it starts from this, not idea, but I think truth that money is an energy of love. It's not a neutral energy. Most people teach that money is energy and it's a neutral energy, and therefore it's up to you what you do with it. And so if you do good things with it, that's good. If you do bad things with it, that's bad. Here it says, I'm an energy of love and I'm here for everybody. People can still do bad things, but what the reason why that's different is because it helps people to resolve that very deep conflict that most of us have inside ourselves, which comes from religion and spiritual traditions, where fundamentally money is corrupting and dangerous, and being poor is virtuous and makes you into a good person and enables you to go to heaven, enables you to be a good, virtuous monk in the East. So I think it helps to resolve this very deep unspoken conflict that people experience. I know people who are wealthy and feel so guilty about it.
I have so many questions about wealth and around that, but I notice in the introduction, your second thing says you can't control money. What does that mean?
Well, we all try to control money, which is a very frustrating experience. Money is energy. Money is an aspect of life energy. It's the flow of value between human beings. And ultimately, it touches into the energy of the flow of value across the universe. It's about exchange of value. Money is very much about value. You can't control life. You can't control the flows of life, and money is a part of that. You can't control generosity and abundance, the real thing, not just like, oh, I want abundance, but actually the abundance of life itself that we are a part of. You can't control that. What you can do is align yourself with it. You can make friends with it. You can stop fighting it. You can give up on the resistance that comes from all those stories, like good people don't go, poor rich people don't go to heaven, or whatever it is. Money doesn't grow on trees, the stuff we're very familiar with.
So what does money say about, like, what is the best way to receive money? Like, everybody would love to have more money in their life because of what money gives them, the resources, the freedom. So what do we need to do to receive more of it?
I would say there are four things, really. The first three are very simple, not always easy to do. So one is to relax, to relax about money. Even if you don't have enough money, even if you're really in a difficult place, being tense and worried about it closes you off to the flow of energy, literally, and actually the flow of money as well. So worrying never helps you make more money. So first of all, relax. The next thing the money says all the time in the book is enjoy. Enjoy money, enjoy your life, enjoy what you're doing, because it makes you relaxed and open. It makes it much easier for good things to come into your life. Just imagine if you have a relationship that you enjoy, you're going to have a much better relationship. If you're stressed and worried all the time in your relationship, it's no good. The third one is love. I've already mentioned that. But the other piece, you've got relax, enjoy, love. That's the sort of soft, beautiful, more feminine piece. And then clarity about what you want. And that's what dynamically kind of engages the energy and makes everything work. And then you become receptive to, and if you're clear what you want and you're receptive, it's much easier for you to experience it.
Right. So it sounds like what you're saying in general is, I don't want to use the term, but like you want to raise your energy levels to one that are of a higher frequency, something that's, you know, enjoying life, happy, fulfilled, like being in that more open space, so that then you connect to it on that level, so it can flow to you more naturally.
It's interesting. I don't usually use the expression higher frequency because I find it puts people under a lot of pressure. It's like, I've got to get my frequency up. But what it really is relaxing into being yourself.
Okay.
Relax into enjoyment. It's like drop into enjoyment. You know, even if you're having a horrible time, you can decide to enjoy yourself doing whatever you're doing. Just enjoy washing the dishes, cleaning, whatever it is. Just bring a little enjoyment into your life. Just drop into it. It's much easier than raising your frequency.
Yes. I remember one time I heard Esther Hicks say that our natural state of being is happy, joyful, loving being. And that when we're not that, it's an active, it's an act of resistance, but it's something active that we're doing. It's like you're holding a cork underwater that naturally wants to float, but you're holding it on the bottom of the water. And if you just relax and open your hand, the cork will naturally rise up to the surface.
Yeah, there's a fundamental well-being actually in life. And I teach people how to access that directly. And once you know it, you know it. There's no unknowing it. It's hard work. You have to work hard to be unhappy. I understand why we've all been unhappy, me too. Right. And there are a lot of stories in life that make us unhappy and make us believe that being unhappy is somehow natural and how we should feel. But when you really relax into that natural well-being, it's like, oh, this is natural. It's so obvious. And then you start to realize how hard you work to hold your natural inner state at bay, so to speak.
Right. Beautiful. Okay. We're going to take our next commercial break. When we come back, I want to ask you about some of the apparent contradictions around money and wealth.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
And then I'm going to dive back into some of these chapters in the book that I just love the titles of them. So we're going to do that after we come back from this break. Okay. Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Sarah McCrum, author of the book, Love Money, Money Loves You. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Misalignment within your sales team or with a client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Sarah, you know, a lot of people get hung up on some apparent contradictions around money. And you're talking about like the energy of money is an energy of love. So naturally, we think that, well, so then if somebody has more money, they should have more love. Yet sometimes really horrible things are done by people who have millions and billions of dollars beyond it. So how can they have that much money and still do horrible things?
Horrible people do horrible things. You know, people can have beautiful babies and do horrible things with them. It's not the baby that is horrible. It's the person. It's the person. Mm-hmm. So we have to first really clearly understand. But there's another question in your question, I think, is also how do horrible people have so much money?
Right.
which is also important, I think, to address. What I really learned from money is, if you know, it's rather like if a guy loves his car, he's going to pay a lot of attention to it, and he's going to do, you know, that you see this with people. They polish their cars and the car's immaculate inside. If somebody really loves money, they're really open to it and they really work on how to be receptive to it. Money's not going to say, you're a horrible person, I don't come. It's rather like, you know, energy is available to everybody. And the beauty of that is available to everybody. It's like it doesn't, babies don't say, I'm not going to go to horrible parents. They arrive with horrible parents. So life has a generosity built into it. I think it's that that's what life is. But what we do with that, that's our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So yeah, really, it's not looking at a person as a monolith, that they're all just one thing. Like they can have love for money and that, and still
they can kind of love money. Well, they can be very, you know, it ties in with your previous question before the break. Right. They're very receptive to money. If you think how many people, I see this all the time, people who have very little money are actually incredibly unreceptive to money. They make it very difficult for money to come in. It's a hard thing to say, but it is true. Mm-hmm. So we do need to change if we want to make more money.
What makes people so unreceptive to money?
Some of it's family background, you know, growing up in a family that does. Some people grow up in poor families and say, I never want to repeat this. And they get really interested in money. A lot of people reject money. They say money, you know, money and me, they don't work together. I'm never going to be rich. If you say I'm never going to be rich to an energy that it's like you're making a pronouncement about yourself, or it doesn't happen for people like me. A lot of self-worth issues, a lot of stories, money doesn't grow on trees and it's never going to grow on trees. So we repeat these stories and we make it our truth, but it's not the underlying truth. As we know, there are plenty of people who've come from very challenging backgrounds who change their story.
Yes, yes, completely, completely. So you have a whole chapter in here called Desire for Money. And as I recall, the phrase that gets misinterpreted all the time is, it's not money is the root of all evil, it's the desire or the love of money is the root of all evil. Meaning when we, and I think it's not so much about money, but more about what money represents, which is power. So when you put that above everything else, it can cause trouble. But what does money have to say about desire for money?
Money is really interesting because, as you will know as well, Buddhists especially, you know, the word desire is particularly challenging and you're supposed to have no attachment and let go of all desires. And this book's very in your face about desire. So what I've come to understand is that the natural desires we have as a human being, you know, which might be to buy something, it might be for an experience we want to have in our life, that comes from really from our soul. You know, the soul arrives in this life. It's a bundle of desire. It's here to have an experience. It's here to have lots and lots of experiences. So I think that there's a natural desire we have for a rich life, which is a life full of experiences, which is unique. Each person has different desires. And money encourages us to listen to those desires. I think the desire for money or the love of money, when we put money and we don't look at value, money's really about value. Okay. And when we divorce from our values, our fundamental values, and we just seek money, but we don't see that money is a representation of value, that's when we get into trouble. And we see that a lot in the world. We see people now who make money out of money with no value provided to anybody whatsoever, except cash for themselves. For me, I feel very strongly about that. And the book's very strong on value sitting at the center, and service, like making a contribution to somebody else is what creates the value. It enables a healthy exchange here.
The gentleman who I purchased the radio station from 15 years ago, who became a Buddhist monk, he was telling me about how from one year to his next, his business like doubled and tripled or whatever. And the only thing he did differently was he contributed more to charity.
Because what that does is it gives a message that you can afford to give. It's like, and that actually makes you more receptive to more coming in. But there is a caveat there, because I've seen this happen. There are people who think, and this happens a lot in the kind of new wealth space. If I give everything away, somehow the energy will return to me. And I've seen people make themselves completely broke like that.
Yeah, because it's not about giving everything away. That's kind of silly.
You've got to actually be generous to yourself,
right?
If you want to be generous to other people. You can't do generosity as a guilt trip.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. You have a chapter in here called A Partnership with Money. What's the partnership?
A lot of the people who read the book and learn more about it, go deeper into this, find themselves in a friendship with money. It feels like money is this constant presence in their life. I feel the same thing. Mm. It's an alive presence. It's not a dead thing. It's not a coin or a transaction. These are the representations, but the energy itself is very alive and always moving. And so you start to feel like you have this literally like a kind of life partner who doesn't get moody, which is very nice, and is really backing you. It's really on your side. And what you need to do is just figure out, how do I make this partnership work really well for me, for my unique individual values, what I stand for in life, what I care about. It's not how do I become a multimillionaire.
Right.
It's how do I do what I care about? And maybe I need to be a multimillionaire in order to do that. And maybe that's not my desire. I want to live a simple family life. There's no judgment whatsoever in any of this.
What does money have to say about flow? Because I hear people also talk about flow a lot, that, you know, it's not about holding on to it, but allowing money to flow through us.
I think what's important to understand about money is that it is always moving. It is a flow. Mm. If you think about it, if you see the grand flows around the planet, so to speak, it's always moving. The other thing is important to understand is when we invest or when we save money, typically, unless we put it in a sock under the bed, it's actually always working. So the money, if you invest money, it's working in somebody else's business and providing you a return. So there's lots of flow happening there. Mm. If you save money, that money is sitting in a, if it's in a bank account, that bank is using your money to, in other, it's not sitting in a vault somewhere. It's actually moving and working. So money flows naturally. So it's not, again, about you have to spend everything you receive. Saving and investing are very legitimate financial activities. Mm. But when we understand that money is alive and moving all the time, I no longer think when I spend money, oh, I'm poorer now. You know, some money's gone out, I'm poorer. I think, oh, there's money coming. There's always money coming. But it comes and it goes, and I decide where I put it. What, you know, I can divert it into all these different channels and play with it.
I remember years ago, I can't remember who it was, but I remember this woman saying that whenever she spends money, she thinks of it, the dollar bills, as little soldiers going out to do their work in the world, and that eventually they're going to come back to her and with all their friends.
Yeah, it is rather like that. I see them as like, they're almost like this little kind of bureaucrats. There's like a little bureaucratic or big organization that sort of makes all of this thing work. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful picture.
You have a section in here called The Sweetness of Money. What's that about?
It's a very sweet energy. When you get to know it, it's actually really a very, very sweet energy. Mm. I heard an interview yesterday with somebody who'd won the lottery and in the UK. Mm-hmm. And she was such a beautiful human being. And it had created so many wonderful experiences for her. And there was a generosity. And I could see she really understood and was experiencing the sweetness of money.
You know, you bring up something very interesting, because this is an example so many people use, that most lottery winners, like 80% of them, 5 years after they win the lottery, they're back at the same level they were or worse off than they were before. Why is that?
Okay, so let's just have a look at that, because there's a part of me that's questioning, is it true? I always want to check whether those things are true. But fundamentally, where that, let's just say where that does happen, Mm-hmm. It's because people didn't allow themselves to change. In a way, they didn't allow themselves to recognize the generosity of what had happened to them and step into the generosity of spirit that it takes to steward that amount of money. And so they stayed with their old values, old systems, old understanding, and may have felt they didn't deserve it, or, you know, there'll be everyone will have an individual story. But so the example I saw, she was so appreciative of what had happened, and she used the money so wisely. And they're very well supported, by the sound of things, in the UK, the lottery winners, in order to make the most of it. Yeah,
I one time heard of a lottery winner who was a young woman who was in college at the time, and she won the Powerball, which is like the big lottery. And she said that she wasn't going to drop out of college. She was still going to continue and get her degree. And she was taking she was going to use the money to like buy a house for her parents. And then she was investing like half the money or more than half the money. And she's like, I'm going to save the money. I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to go out and get a job, and I'm going to use it for something more in the future. And I thought that was such a enlightened approach to winning the lottery, because that's not usually what happens. Usually someone wins a lottery and they spend. And before they know it, it's all gone.
Because they're used to their money going. They're used to money coming in. The habit is to spend. I've just now got more to do what I always do with money.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole story there is money always goes to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's patterns.
Right. Which is not true, except for some people.
It's true if you make it true. It's not true if you don't make it true. The student, the college student, decided right from the beginning that that was not going to be her story.
Her story. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. Okay. It's time for us to take our last break. When we come back, I just have a couple of more questions about your book. Love Money, Money Loves You. And then we'll finish it up and we'll let people know how to get in touch with you. Okay. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back to wrap it up with our guest, Sarah McCrum, in just a moment.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Sarah, I'm curious if money has...
On Frank About Health...
And messages... Oops.
We're managing disruption and innovation.
We got a little audio.
For the last 4 years, I've...
Okay. Hopefully we got that straight. Does money have any general messages for the world at large? Is there something that universal that money really wants people to know that they don't realize?
Yes. There's an evolution going on in our money systems, and money is gradually going to flow more towards people contributing to making the world a better place. That's what I really noticed. I think we've been in a period where there was a lot of quite selfish desire for money.
Yeah.
That's shifting. It takes time for these systems to shift. It's not an overnight, but there is a shift in direction around that. And so it's very much encouraging us to think about the world that we would like to see and how we can contribute to that. So it's thinking us to think beyond our own personal sphere.
You work with people individually, right?
I mostly run groups. I do a lot of
groups. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you have a group and a group of people coming and they have challenges around money, their relationship with money, are there certain like patterns that are very common through most people? Like, is there certain challenges that most people have with money that you see?
Yeah, I would say the first thing that most people have is just really big issues around self-love. And that occurs for people who do have money, have a lot of money, and also for people who lack money.
Right.
Changing your relationship with yourself, actually healing your relationship with yourself, opens up your relationship with everything, including money, because you're not then sharing these kind of subtle messages like, I don't deserve it, I'm not worth it, I'm a bad person. We have many variations, but it's more like, I'm a whole person here. I'm individual. I'm different from anyone else. I'm neither special nor not special. I'm me. And what do I want in my life? What am I here for? And it becomes a free choice then, rather than this kind of like trying to squeeze something out of somebody who feels really bad about themselves.
Yeah. A lot of people, have like a limit. I remember seminars years ago, people used to talk about like a thermostat. Like if you grew up in a middle-class household, you're more than likely to be middle-class and not really get above that too much. Or if you grew up in a upper class or lower upper class, like that's where you'd end up. How can people learn to be more aware of sort of just what they're used to compared to what they're actually able to have?
It does require curiosity. Like if what you're used to is working really well for you, there's no motivation to change. But if you're curious about what's possible for you in life, or if you feel like I'm not really, this doesn't feel like the life I came here to live. I feel like there's something missing. That's the stimulus for curiosity. Once you get curious about money and about wealth and about how we create that, so that means about business fundamentally, about contribution and work and business. Once you get curious about that and also about how to steward wealth, what to do with it, that's very important, then you're on the journey of learning and growing. So, you need to want it.
Yeah. I noticed you also had in here in your book a chapter on practical advice, financial assessments.
There are some little exercises in the book which they're slightly unconventional. They're not the normal ones that we do, that help you to see where you are and where there's potential for you to grow more. So they're difficult to explain, but they're interesting exercises to do because they make you think a little bit out of the box about yourself.
Okay, great. So if someone's starting on this path, like they're listening to this conversation, of course, they should go pick up the book, Love Money, Money Loves You.
That's what changes everything, is reading the book, actually. Then it's like, okay, now I have a better understanding of what money is. Now that's what, you know, then you've got something to be curious about.
Right.
Yeah, the book has a very powerful place in this.
So once people order the book and they're waiting for the book to arrive, is there anything they can do in preparation? Like what should really be someone's first step in attempting to change their relationship and cultivate a new relationship with money?
I actually, you know what I want to say? I want to say, just wait, anticipate, just wait for the book to come. The reason being that an awful lot of what we do around money is work too hard. And I don't want to encourage people to start trying to figure it out when they don't yet know what they're figuring out. You're where you are because of the understanding and the relationship you have with money now. If you want to change it, you need a different understanding of money. So I would say wait till the book comes, because the first thing the book's going to show you is that you need to relax about money.
Yes, yes. Wonderful, wonderful. You've been kind of working with the energy of money for a while now, right?
Yes.
Have you seen sort of general shifts and changes since you started working with it, in terms of like around people, around attitudes towards money? Like, have you seen a shift in the overall consciousness around money?
Yes. Yes. There's definitely a shift going on. 12, 13 years ago when I wrote the book, it was not even easy to talk about lots of these things. The place where I see it most of all is that I begin to see the businesses coming out that are trying to create new systems of wealth that are serious. They're not just a new way of getting rich quick, but they're trying to look at how we can distribute wealth in a way that works for all of us, not just a few of us. These are getting very serious now. And I see that in the grand awakening of human beings, there are more and more people curious about their relationship with money. And my book sells itself now just because people share it wherever they go. So yeah, there's been a huge change, and it's ongoing, and I think it's accelerating.
Wow, wonderful, wonderful. So there is a reason to hope for a better future then, yes?
Yes, we need to lean into it for sure. Yeah. It's not, yes. I would not say that it's assured. I think, you know, we could take a pretty dark path as humanity. But I definitely see that there's tremendous support for taking a path that is benign, that is kind to humanity, is kind and generous to ourselves, and not punishing. So, yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sarah, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. If people want to learn more about you, get in touch with you, work with you, how would they find you? Where do they find you online?
The easiest place is to go to my website, which is sarahmccrum.com, or just look up Sarah McCrum on Google. You'll find me right away.
Wonderful, wonderful. So highly recommended again. The name of the book is Love Money, Money Loves You. Available at all major booksellers, correct?
Yes, and on audio. Most people love the audio. So it's really what it's on Spotify. It's on Audible.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Did you record the audio yourself, or you had someone do it for you?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you did. Oh, so we get to listen to you in the audio.
Yeah, wonderful. And the transmission of the audio, the actual transmission of energy is strong. People really appreciate it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, cool. We'll have to check it out then. Sarah, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule, especially from down under. Really appreciate you coming on this show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in every week. Without you, there is no show. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and all over social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Twitch, wherever you listen to your live streams. You can find us there, as well as on all the podcasting apps, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Amazon. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.